Welcome to the DLF Dynasty Podcast with your hosts, Dan Myler, Ryan McDowell, and Matt Price.
Yeah, we are the DLF Dynasty Podcast. I'm Dan, that's Matt, over there is Ryan, and we are coming at you with episode 612 of the show. Lots to get to this week, including three more 2024 rookies to talk about in our rookie report. We're also going to go through our personal rookie rankings at this point in the offseason. That'll be a fun conversation, and of course, we're going to get to the startup as well. So very rookie-centric. First, we need to bring in the fellas. Ryan? We're what, like a little over a month away from draft night, opening night of the NFL draft. We're going to learn landing spots. There's a lot of deciphering to do before that comes, but man, it's a fun time of year to be a dynasty manager.
Yeah, definitely. Still plenty of time for mock drafts. We got some pro days left, plenty of time for speculation when it comes to the draft, but with free agency kind of coming to a slow end here, we're definitely ready to turn our attention to the NFL draft, and it's going to be a fun next 4 or 5 weeks. Looking forward to that.
Of course, we've been we turned our attention to the NFL draft back in January. It doesn't seem like that long ago, but it's been a couple months since we talked about Drake May and Ray Davis on that first episode of the Rookie Report, Matt. And we were just talking about how many players we've gotten to, and it's a lot. Honestly, we got to be over 30 at this point. And there are so many more still to talk about, right?
Yeah, there is. There's just so many. You know, I'm starting to really like crystallize how I feel about these players and starting them into tiers, and then we're going to get the draft, and it's going to change everything, right? So it's the way it is every year. We invest all these times in these players, and the draft comes and players fall or players rise, and we've got to reevaluate. And it's exciting to get to talk about some of these players we haven't yet, and some of these players are going to be, you know, our deep dynasty stashes and that. So we've got a lot to do. We looked at our number of rookies remaining to talk about, the number of shows left, and we're going to have to shuffle things around to get to all of them.
Yeah, we're going to try to fit in as many as we can. I just looked. We've covered 33. We'll get that number up to 36 after this week's episode. And, you know, you mentioned there, Matt, that values change so much on draft weekend. We're all accustomed to it, very used to it for sure. But there's so much information that we don't have that NFL teams do. You know, we're trying to piece these things together. We don't get to meet with the players. We don't get their health reports. We don't see any of that. So they rise and fall based on those types of things. The only thing that we have is the NFL draft to show us some of that. And, you know, that's one of the only weekends where the NFL can't lie to us, and they actually tell us what they think of a player, what the NFL says about them, said through where they're drafted in the draft. So let's get to the startup here. We got a fun one to talk about.
The startup.
Yeah, we thought, you know, this week, guys, I saw an article. I think it was Sports Illustrated. They were ranking the biggest improvements by NFL teams this offseason so far. And I was shocked when I read that article because the Bears were not number one on the list. They were actually number two, which was a little bit surprising to me. In the fantasy world, I would say even without those ancillary pieces or non-skill position pieces included, the Bears are still pretty high on the list. They're one of the teams that really improved, not only through free agency, but what they've done by committing that first pick already to Caleb Williams, it appears. On top of that, though, Ryan, DeAndre Swift is added in free agency. Keenan Allen is added via a draft pick trade. That was a great value. DJ Moore seems to be very excited about playing with Keenan Allen. The whole tweet about the race to 1,000 yards, those types of things. I saw another tweet from ex-DLF podcast host Nick Whalen that suggested maybe this is the best situation for any number one overall pick ever. And I got to looking at his list of past number one picks, and it's hard to argue that with Swift at running back. Of course, Kmet, a solid tight end. They added another one in free agency. And then the duo of Keenan Allen and DJ Moore out wide. it's hard to argue if there's ever been a better set of weapons for a number one overall pick under center.
Yeah, I've heard that conversation a few different places on Twitter and sports talk radio and things like that. And, I think it probably is certainly a very good case, if not a lock. You know, it starts with this team did not earn the 101, right? I mean, the majority of years you're talking about a team that was so bad that they were the worst team in the league and get that top pick. And that's not the case with the Bears. And, you know, it's really interesting because a lot of the moves they have made on their own, you know, in a vacuum, I wouldn't say I liked. I mean, I thought they overpaid for DeAndre Swift. They bring in Gerald Everett when they already have Cole Kmet and have signed him to a pretty decent contract. So some of the moves on their own were questionable. I mean, we talked a lot last week about the Justin Fields move, and essentially they didn't get much for him. So on their own, not great moves. But when you look at the total list here of shoring up the starting running back, getting another high level wide receiver, and as you said, now we know they are taking Caleb Williams, if there was any doubt. You know, altogether, really, really impressive offseason. And I'm excited to see what this Bears team really looks like once they're on the field together.
Yeah, and maybe the missing piece to this whole puzzle, especially on the offensive side, has been the offensive line, which was a problem last year. But like you mentioned there, Ryan, the Bears earned the number 9 pick in the NFL draft. And that could very well be an offensive tackle to help that offensive line. That group certainly needs some additions. I know they added a fringe starting center. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. And I think a couple of tackles, that guy from the 49ers, Matt Pryor, that's like more of a swing tackle, but there's some work to do there. Matt, when you look at each of these pieces individually, specifically Keenan Allen and DeAndre Swift, maybe Gerald Everett as well, how do you think this group really helps Caleb Williams once he gets to Chicago?
I mean, I just wish they had done the same thing for Dougie. But like you said, it's such a great situation to come into. Keenan Allen was the wide receiver 8 last season in fantasy, despite missing the final four games. DJ Moore was the wide receiver 6 last year, so he's got an excellent set of pass catchers. We know what Cole Kmet could do, especially in the red zone. And then they upgraded their running backs. You know, the only thing to really be sad about here, honestly, is maybe Roschon Johnson. You know, we thought maybe he might take a little bit of a step forward. To me, that more says that maybe DeAndre Swift is not necessarily the signing we should get excited about. With Khalil Herbert there as well, you know, maybe he doesn't have his role. We did see Swift last season get about 55% of the snaps with Philly, and we saw Boston Scott still getting on the field. We saw Kenny Gainwell still getting on the field, and I think that both of these players are at least equivalent, if not better, than those two that were behind him last season. So I worry about that a little bit for him. But for Caleb Williams, I mean, you guys nailed it. It's such an incredible situation. The offensive line, too, PFF rated as the 11th best offensive line in the league a few days ago. So, I mean, he's got everything he needs to succeed, I would say, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it certainly seems that way at this point. You know, going back to what you said about Swift, his ability to make plays in the passing game is really his calling card at this point in his career, right? That explosiveness after the catch, and he's versatile, and he's at 5'9 and 215 pounds, he's probably a better tackle breaker than he gets credit for. The thing is, he hasn't been used to his potential yet in his career, I would say. And maybe Chicago will give him that opportunity. You mentioned 55% of the snaps in Philadelphia last year was sharing that role mostly all season, but did have some big games for the Eagles. I wonder if the Bears see him as a 16 to 18 kind of touch guy, or if they see him as a guy that will mix in. We'll see how that plays out. How about you, Ryan? It, going back to Keenan Allen, the veteran receiver, the guy who always catches 100 passes, it seems, always goes over 1,200 yards. Is he going to, if you have Keenan Allen on a contending team right now, you're maybe thinking, I got a wide receiver two here, a great wide receiver two, even when he's in Los Angeles. Are you just as excited now that he's with a rookie quarterback and a coaching staff that's new to Chicago on the offensive side of the football?
Yeah, probably not. I mean, I think the Allen acquisition was great for the Bears. Obviously, fills a huge need as that. You know, I don't even know if we should say second option behind DJ Moore. Maybe first option in the passing game. Regardless, fills a need as another option in the passing game. And I believe they gave a fourth rounder, certainly like that price from the Bears' perspective. But when we're just talking about Keenan Allen moving from the Chargers. And Justin Herbert to the Bears and Caleb Williams. No, I'm certainly not as confident. And throw in Allen being another year older, which is always something we worry about with these veteran players. Then I'm expecting him to take a decent step back. You know, that said, his price is still very reasonable in Dynasty, as is usually the case with these 30-plus year old players.
I think we see them both fall back, right? Like a wide receiver six, a wide receiver eight. I don't think either of them are going to finish as wide receiver ones this year, but I think both are probably locked in that 24 range, the top 24 range, the 12 to 24 range. We had two pairs of wide receivers on the same team last year, finished in the top 24. It seems like we have two or three almost every single year, and these two seem, you know, just as likely as any other pair to do so.
Yeah. So what this reminded me of, and it's pretty easy to put this together, was like a better version of Adam Thielen landing with Carolina last year. Veteran receiver, underneath routes, catching lots of passes. Thielen caught 103 passes for over 1,000 yards and 4 touchdowns. I think Keenan Allen can easily go over those numbers. Mm-hmm. Keenan Allen, of course, put up bigger numbers last year. And he only played 13 games, of course, missed some times, 108 catches for over 1,200 yards and 7 touchdowns. He may not reach the touchdown numbers, but I think we can pencil him in for around 100 catches and over 1,000 yards without batting an eye. And those are wide receiver two numbers as Thielen put up a year ago. But anything else to add here in Chicago, guys?
I was just saying, but Thielen was the only show in town, whereas this team has, you know, loads of weapons now. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's
fair. You don't think he's getting 100 catches?
I don't know, man. Not if he's spreading the ball around. DJ Moore, how many?
DJ Moore is going to be running won't be running those underneath routes. He won't be the check down and the quick crossing route option. That's all going to be Keenan Allen. And with the offensive line, you know, problems that we mentioned earlier, it really feels like he's going to be that first read, first target more often than not. And I would bet on Allen catching more passes than DJ Moore, although Moore could make more downfield plays, which could even him out.
I mean, Dan, you mentioned the coaching staff. And of course, you know, if you go back to midseason, I mean, I think the expectation was we would have a total overhaul at the coaching staff in Chicago, and kind of a hot streak to end the season. Allowed some of those guys to keep their job, but they bring in Shane Waldron from Seattle. And I mean, you look at what he did with the Seahawks the past several years. And, you know, that was really a run heavy team, despite having some really talented receivers in Metcalf and Lockett. They still wanted to focus on the run game. And, you know, we still saw those two receivers make plenty of plays, put up some big fantasy numbers. But at the same time, they were also both very inconsistent. And you just wonder how that carries over to Chicago and what's going to be a brand new offense, a brand new quarterback.
Yeah, and Waldron has been around for a while. But his last 3 years with the Seahawks, like you mentioned, lots of, you know, tilted towards the running game for sure. Not sure if that had more to do with the head coach there and what his preferences were in Pete Carroll. Those same preferences could still exist in Chicago. It might be more run game oriented. But one thing you can say about what Waldron did in Seattle is he got the ball to his biggest weapons regularly, right? That Seattle offense was not spreading it out to 5, 6, 7 receivers every single week. he was getting the ball to the guys that we as fantasy managers really wanted to see get the football. That is going to be Keenan Allen and certainly DJ Moore. Before we get to our rookie report, which is going to be segment two this week.
It's time for the rookie report.
Yeah, we moved the rookie report up a segment this week so we could go through our dynasty rookie rankings in the last segment. And we have a fun rookie to talk about off the bat, Matt. It is Georgia tight end Brock Bowers, expected to be a very high draft pick. One of these guys with elite fantasy upside, elite positional upside at the next level. And the hype is real with this guy. Dynasty managers are jacked to get Brock Bowers on their roster for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, he's the most productive tight end over the first 3 years of his collegiate career of any tight end in history. Basically, he was the leading receiver all 3 years on a Georgia team that didn't throw all that much. Second most receiving yards by a tight end in 2023, despite missing three games. Two-time John Mackey Award winner for the best tight end in college football. I mean, There's not a whole lot not to like here, you know, other than, I know you guys are going to might guffaw at this, but other than Kyle Pitts, he's the best route running tight end that I've seen come out since I've started evaluating film, really back in like 2010, 2011, something like that. He's got that elite lateral movement skills. Like, that's really, like, I think what separates him from a lot of tight end prospects is that lateral movement skills he has. I mean, he can just create instant separation on any kind of breaking route, especially those in and out breaking routes. He doesn't lose speed when changing direction. He changes speed or tempo within his routes to disguise what he's doing at the top of the stem. He's versatile. He plays, you know, 50% of his routes and from the slot, 38% in line, 9% out wide. I mean, there's some nitpicky things you can argue about with him, Dan, but I mean, it feels like the same as when we talk about Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison. There's not a ton of nuance to what we don't like about this player.
Exactly. We like everything about his game, right? He's a traditional or more of a he's a pass catching tight end, and that's what we all want to see. The one problem, and you outlined the on field stuff. The one problem I have is actually Kyle Pitts when it comes to Bowers. You know, we all have been so excited about Pitts coming to the NFL and becoming that next truly elite dynasty tight end. And it just hasn't happened. And Pitts is so much more athletic, so much better at the catch point. Well, not so much better, but certainly that same kind of player at the catch point. It hasn't translated at all, really, in the few years that we've had him in the NFL. So honestly, I'm scared. And Pitts isn't the only one. We've had so many of these guys that were in this vein, certainly supposed to be a high-end fantasy tight end, and it just doesn't happen. So when it comes to when we should take him in rookie drafts, whether it be super flex or single quarterback, I'm going to continue to move some of these wide receivers over him, and certainly these quarterbacks in super flex, because although he has that kind of upside, we've seen so many before him take multiple years, like Evan Ingram, or Kyle Pitts, if he ever does turn it around, or take or never come around at all. And if we get another David Njoku or Ingram or Pitts, we're going to be disappointed with a top five pick in Brock Bowers.
I mean, if he does what Kyle Pitts or Evan Ingram did in their rookie season, I feel like you're not going to be that upset about his rookie season. I know Kyle Pitts didn't catch the touchdowns, but he did have 1,000 yards. And Evan Green Ingram, I believe, was a top five fantasy tight end in his rookie season.
I believe he will, Matt. That's fine. Let's say he does that. But if Malik Nabers is the guy that we expect him to be, you'll be disappointed.
Oh, well, I don't think
I'd much rather take Nabers. I'd much rather take Roma Dunze.
Of course.
We're going to talk about our tiers, and Brock Bowers doesn't fall into the same tier as these receivers who I think have wide receiver one upside, not for their NFL team, but dynasty upside. And while Brock Bowers has maybe tight end one overall upside, I think it's far more likely that Nabers, Adunze, and certainly Marvin Harrison Jr. hit their ceiling over Brock Bowers, not just because of what these tight ends have done in the past, but Bowers doesn't compare to some of these guys athletically. And that's enough to scare me off and push him down to the middle and maybe even later parts, maybe even 7 or 8 in a rookie draft in Superflex. Ryan, what do you have to say when it comes to Bowers and his upside?
Well, if you look at current ADP, he's obviously the tight end one in everything when it comes to rookies. 4 overall in our single quarterback ADP behind those 3 receivers you mentioned, Harrison, Neighbors, Odunze, and for the most part, he was being drafted behind those 3 in it looks like about 80% of the mocks that we ran. So I wouldn't say nobody is taking Bowers over specifically Odunze, but I think the 3 wide receivers in the large majority of leagues are going to be drafted ahead of Bowers. I'm really looking at Bowers as kind of in a tier of his own in single quarterback, because I'm not taking him over those 3 receivers, but right now, until we get some landing spots, I don't think any of the other guys, and we'll name the rest of these names in our next segment, but you know, you're talking about Brian Thomas and Troy Franklin, Xavier Worthy. I'm not considering those players over Bowers at this point. So in single quarterback, I think he's locked in at that 4 spot. Maybe you can argue some of those second tier quarterbacks if you're talking super flex. Right now, his ADP is 8 overall in our super flex rookie draft. So that's kind of where I'm seeing him. And honestly, value-wise, I don't really think there's much of a conversation right now, because I do think he's in a tier of his own.
Yeah, I would add Brian Thomas. I don't think you mentioned him. I would take Brian Thomas over Brock Bowers, but they're real close to me. So, you know, I think that's probably different for most that watch all these guys. We talked about Thomas last week. Again, I think he has that kind of pedigree and upside to be a high-end fantasy receiver, and I'd rather take the receiver than the tight end, to be honest with you. Now, Matt, you mentioned all those positives, but there are some things that make you think twice about his upside. And I think specifically for me, it's the missed opportunities on contested catches, and specifically high throws, where you think, man, elite tight ends go get that football. And Bowers has it knocked out of his hands, or even gave up a couple times in what I saw as high throws for first downs on third down, or even in the red zone or end zone, that made me think maybe that elite, like, killer instinct to go get the ball isn't quite there. He's certainly a guy at the catch point that you like, but there isn't a huge catch radius, not the ability to go get the ball way up high that you see from some of these tight ends. And that gives me a little bit of pause, and maybe that's probably the reason that pushes him down a little bit for me.
Well, like you said, if you're gonna nitpick, I think it is the size. You know, he's 6'3", which is the 23rd percentile for tight ends. He's 243 pounds, 12th percentile for tight ends. Below average catch radius. His arm length and his wingspan are both 37th percentile. So those are the things that he's had to overcome. But he's certainly overcome it, at least at the highest level competition in college football, right? And you mentioned the contested catches, only not great this year. I mean, honestly, it was hard to find a lot of like instances where he was in a contested catch situation. There was almost always separation between them. But in 2023, he was 2 of 9 on contested catch rate, according to PFF, just 22%, which was 84th among 100 qualifying tight ends. But, you know, I don't know how much you watched. I'm sure you did because you're a college football fan, but I went back and watched the 2022 tape as well, and he was much better. For his career, he's actually 23 of 39, so 59% uncontested catch rates. They just had kind of a, I don't know if you would even call it bad, if he only had 9 opportunities all season. Like, that seemed like a pretty small sample size for a tight end for a contested catch rate. But, yeah, like, there are definitely little warts that you have to pick out. I will say, if you really want to see, like, what Brock Bowers is capable of, go watch, like, the Auburn game. Like, everything he does that in that game, I think, is absolutely incredible. So I don't know. I'm still taking him. I'm not taking him ahead of Neighbors or Neighbors.
The comp
or
I see
Harrison
regularly
Jr.
is George Kittle.
I've seen that too. I don't know. I think Kittle's a little more physical than he is. Maybe by a little, I mean
yeah,
like.
Yeah, and that's, That was going to be my point as well. Kittle's much better at the point attack and the running game, and certainly plays with more aggressiveness at the catch point than what you see out of Bauer. So, you know, ask somebody who has George Kittle on their dynasty team, and you'll get some different responses, right? Some are very happy. Others have been disappointed for stretches of his career, considering his value and where he's been, who he's been compared against as far as dynasty value goes. So
what?
I probably won't have him on any dynasty teams. I'm going to push him lower. There's going to be somebody in every league that expects him to be the next big thing at tight end, be the next Travis Kelce. And I don't even know if that upside exists for him to be that dominant.
One other note that's a little bit of a negative. You know, I like to have a top two target for my tight ends. There's not a lot of great landing spot for tight ends once you get outside. Like once you get past what if the Chargers take him as their primary pass catcher, like at five, like that's going to be incredible. I feel like they probably need wide receiver more. Could the Giants take him? But like after you get outside that top 10, like you get into areas where like he's either going to have significant competition or there's at the tight end position specifically, or, you know, just really good pass catchers to compete with as well. So that would probably be my biggest concern is the landing spot and where he might end up.
Ryan, for high-end prospect, he lands all over in mock drafts. In fact, recently here, I would say in the last week or 10 days, you see him blasting into the teens now of the first round in the NFL draft. I'm wondering what that could do to his dynasty stock as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We have started seeing him actually fall. I don't think that's necessarily related to him or any kind of questionable stock or anything like that. I think it's more about really starting to try to find some team needs and some specific player to team matches. I believe at least the last time I checked, the Jets were the favorite to draft Brock Bowers. They picked 10th overall, and I mean that would kind of go along with Matt's goal of having a top two target. Maybe even as early as year one there with the Jets. So that would seemingly be a good landing spot. But yeah, you're right. There's lots of needs in the top 10, top 15 for a tight end. But I don't know that need necessarily equals a good landing spot for fantasy. The Colts at 15, another interesting one. Mm-hmm. He could be possibly a top two target there as well. Yeah, I mean, so much of his value, and I mean, I guess we could say the same thing for most of these guys. So much of his value is going to be related to this landing spot and how early he can produce. And then also just wanted to follow up on one other thing Matt said as far as his size. I was worried about that as well going into the combine, but 6'3", 243. Basically, almost the exact same as Sam Laporta, very similar to what we saw from Dalton Kincaid last year as well. Mm-hmm. So not as much of a concern coming out of the combine for me as far as his size.
All the landing spots, going back to that, Ryan, that I like are in the teens for him. It seems that you mentioned one of them, the Colts at 15. I thought the Saints at 14 would be a nice landing spot. The Bengals at 18, depending on what happens with T. Higgins there.
I don't want that.
The Rams at 19. Those all seem a little better than some of the other ones mentioned. You did say the Jets as well. That might be a good spot, especially if Rodgers is able to stay healthy next season, get him going in the right direction. Overall, feelings on Bowers, Ryan? It doesn't feel like you planted your flag at all. Are you pro taking Brock Bowers where his ADP lands, or are you pushing him a little lower than that?
Reluctantly, if we're doing a rookie draft right now, I'm taking him at 4 overall in a single quarterback league. But with the caveat or really the expectation that I think the draft is going to give us a good enough landing spot for guys like Thomas, Worthy, you know, maybe even going deeper than that, that we see Bowers ending up as a mid first round instead of that top four range.
How about you, Matt? Where are you taking him today if we have to draft?
And I think I agree with Ryan. I'd probably take him 4 in single quarterback, maybe 3. I kind of have him in the same tier with I kind of have him the same tier with Adunze, honestly. And Superflex, he's going in the I take him at 6 or 7, somewhere around there. I want him ahead of Drake May. I don't know. I can't get him on board with Drake May. I don't know why, but he's not my guy.
You know why, Matt, you're not taking drafting Drake May. But that's for another episode.
Tell me why.
No, you know exactly why you're not. He's just not one of your. He's not athletic enough, and he doesn't make those dynamic plays that make you say, "Ooh, he can run me a championship."
He can run some. It's the inconsistent accuracy for me, honestly, with him that I don't know.
Look,
I made a huge mistake last year by not taking. I think I took 0 CJ Stroud. I took Bryce Young over him every time, and it feels like I'm going to make the same mistake with Drake May this year. So. You should probably not listen to me when Drake May and just take him ahead of all these guys.
Well, I'm like 70% of my leagues have CJ Stroud in them. So, and I'm
listen
with
to
you
Dan on quarterbacks.
So listen to me and just keep Drake May where you got him, Matt. Let's talk about another quarterback prospect. This one's from Washington, Michael Penix Jr. I heard some interesting comments about Penix over the last couple of weeks and his upside specifically. Ryan, I want to start with you on Penix because he's all over the board. There are some dynasty managers that think he can compete with for the number 4 to 5 spot in this draft class at the position. Others push him down quite a bit farther, maybe down to 7 or 8, and see him as a developmental backup type option. When it comes to the NFL draft, how do you think the NFL will see Michael Penix Jr.?
You know, I guess I've been really surprised. And I mentioned this on here before, I think when we were maybe talking about McCarthy, but entering the combine or a couple weeks ahead of the combine, it seemed like McCarthy, Michael Penix, and Bo Nix were in this tight competition to see who would be the QB4. And now, still a month plus from the draft, there's seemingly some clarity that McCarthy is obviously locked in at 4, and now Michael Penix has slid to 6. And I guess I'm just surprised. I don't see it as black and white as quite as that, but that's kind of where everything is right now. PFF has Penix is the quarterback 6, 46 overall. Mock draft database, quarterback 6, 39 overall. And even our Superflex ADP has Michael Penix as the quarterback 6, 17 overall in those dynasty rookie drafts. So I think it's, you know, at the very least a conversation between Penix and somebody like Bo Nix. There's a lot to like about Penix. And to me, there's one glaring concern, and that's obviously the injury history.
Yeah, his health history, specifically going back to his time at Indiana. And honestly, those that listen regularly know I'm a Big Ten football fan. That's what I spend my Saturdays watching. And Penix was a disappointment at Indiana. A lot had to do with his lack of health, lack of availability to be on the field. Even without that, though, Matt, his play on the field and certainly looked like a much better player in that Washington offense. Lots of first reads and lots of opportunities to get the ball out of his hands quickly. He also made a lot of plays with his legs. But his consistency when forced to move around, his ability to make accurate throws when he's outside the pocket or on the move, that drops drastically. And I think that's the thing that's going to keep an NFL team from thinking he could be a franchise quarterback. I think it probably pushes him out of the first round in the NFL draft as well. Most likely he's going to be whoever doesn't get a quarterback towards the top of the first round. I think they're going to take him at the top of the second round. Hopefully he doesn't end up on the field too early because he's still rough around the edges. And when you talk about a 24-year-old prospect needing multiple years to sit behind a veteran, that should affect his dynasty value. And that's what pushes him down my ranking so much.
Yeah, I mean, he like Ryan said, he's got a lot. There's a lot to like there. And he's clearly talented, 4,900 passing yards, 36 touchdowns against only 11 interceptions. But he had, I mean, it's just hard because he had a lot of really good receivers, you know, like which one created which, I don't know. He's got a lot of arm strength, and he lives and dies by that deep ball. 21% of his pass attempts were 20 or more yards downfield. But you know, that gets him in trouble sometimes. Like, he defaults to deep ball whenever there is pressure. Notice I said arm strength, not necessarily arm talent, because it's just really inconsistent accuracy, really inconsistent ball placement. Instead of putting the ball in front of the receiver to create yak opportunities, you see him throw it behind, up top, make the receiver go get a jump ball. And Rome Odunze is so good, he can go up and get those balls, but he's just so inconsistent on that placement on short and 80 intermediate routes.
He was the same way at Indiana, same exact way. He'd throw it behind receivers to stay away from a safety over the top, and it would just cost opportunities to make yards after the catch.
He's really good when he has a clean pocket and he can set his feet and aim where he wants the ball to go. And especially on those deep balls, it looks really good. But like you mentioned, if he has to move, like, he has no escapability. If you want a traditional pocket passer that has to win from the pocket and has a has very good arm strength, like, that's what Penix is. But all of the other stuff is questionable. I really like his he loves to throw that turkey hole throw between the second and third levels of defense along the second on the sideline. And he does look off defenders. He does look off defenders. He reads the field well. He does throw with anticipation sometimes, but it's not all the time. And I just worry, like, he's not going to have super clean pockets all the time and have time to set his feet. And if he has to get outside of the pocket, like, the play is pretty much over unless he goes to a team with a really good kind of dump off option at running back, you know? So I think he is quarterback six, but I do think he's closer to the McCarthy and Nix tier than, you know, the players that come after him, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I guess I would say the same thing. He's in that next tier of players for me, and we're going to get to those tiers here shortly on the show. But there is a tier break between Nix, McCarthy, who I have lumped side by side, and then to get down to Penix, who, he's a statue in there, and he takes so many hits, big hits, so many too. Hits. He steps into big hits, which can be a problem, especially at the next level. So I think it's a bad mix for me, Ryan. It's a fringe first round grade probably by NFL teams, because we're in such need of quarterbacks. He feels like a late day two type player, but he's going to get pushed up, and then he's going to land, I think, early in day two to a bad team who needs a quarterback. Like, maybe the Raiders take him in the top of the second round. He ends up playing a lot early, and that's just a prescription for failure for me, and I just won't have any Michael Penix because of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really frustrating, because, as I said earlier, I do think there's a lot to like about him and his game, but it almost feels inevitable. His play style, as you said, he's a statue back there, and honestly, an injury, and I mean, potentially a serious injury, almost feels inevitable with this guy. He's had four season ending injuries in his college career. I mean, that's a wild and scary stat. I'm with you. I'm mostly avoiding him. He's going to be in that mid second round range of super flex rookie drafts. And there's going to be plenty of other, again, we're going to talk about those tiers very soon, but there's going to be plenty of receivers and running backs in that range to pivot to.
Let's go to the guy that he turned and handed the ball to relatively often this past season. It's Dylan Johnson, the power runner from Washington. He has the build to be an NFL running back, 6 foot, 220 pounds. Hard-nosed running style makes him like somebody that I want to kind of root for. And you know, some guys that we talk about on the show here, fellas, they slip tackles. That's not Dylan Johnson. He breaks tackles. He runs through arm tackles with ease, gets that train moving in full speed, and he's hard to bring down. Those are all the things you like when you watch him play. But unfortunately, he doesn't have the burst to be a big play threat, doesn't have the burst to threaten the perimeter of a defense. And I just question whether he has enough explosion to get through the line of scrimmage and break those tackles at the next level. Some see him as maybe a first and second down option, a guy that can run between the tackles, a guy at the in short yardage and at the goal line that could be productive. I see him as a backup in that role. Like I see him, his upside as a number three NFL running back that might get an opportunity for a couple weeks because there's been some injuries in front of him. But he doesn't have the explosiveness or the athleticism, Matt, to carry your team. Even in the third round of a single quarterback dynasty rookie draft, I'm probably not going to click his name.
He's the discount Audric Estime. You know, he's not quite as powerful. I guess based on the 40, I guess he's a little bit faster, but like, you know, about the same amount of speed, but less size, less explosion. He's not going to be hurdling people like Estime does. You know, he does have a nose for the end zone. He had that really nice game against USC, but I assume USC's defense was really bad because
very bad.
Yep. to allow that back to get 250 yards and four touchdowns or whatever it is. That was his career highlight that game, I think. But yeah, he's not a lot of nuance to his game. He's not an NFL back in this era. If he was in the mid 90s, he'd probably be a second round pick in the NFL draft, right? He's that kind of old school back. So yeah, he's probably not going to be drafted too much in Dynasty, I would guess.
I do like his cutback ability. Despite the lack of burst when he makes that cut, he seems to adjust to blocking in front of him well, and that created the big plays that we did see from him in college, because he would see a backside running lane, and maybe not all the way on the backside, a play that's designed to go off tackle. He would cut between the center and the guard because a blitz came through that outside rushing lane. And that ability created some of those bigger plays. The thing is, backside linebackers and NFL safeties are gonna fill that running lane on the backside, yeah. And he doesn't have the burst to make that next guy miss. So I just don't think those plays translate to the next level, even though we did see them at Washington.
I will say, you know, if he gets a role somehow, there's a chance. He's a big back that catches passes. He caught 24 passes last year. I think you could probably discount the reception totals he had at Mississippi State in that Mike Leach system that we know feeds the running back receptions. He did have 65 receptions in his sophomore season in 2021, 48 the year before or the year after that, and then just 24 this year with Washington. So I don't know how much that receiving game is going to carry over, but if it does, and he ends up in a role like, you know, a spot start here and there, you know, I think you can probably be like, okay, I'm going to pick up this guy off the waivers and put him in as a flex. And, you know, maybe you get a handful of catches and a touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's kind of true of every running back, right? If they get
that's fair.
If they get a job for a
yeah,
week,
I'm not really saying a lot there, yeah.
You know, he's AJ Dillon without the huge thighs, and that's not a
yeah. Yeah. Okay. I like that.
Like Ryan, anything to add here? Is there going to be any draft capital gains that could push him up in the next month?
I don't think so. I mean, anywhere you look, you're seeing him as a projected day three pick, and likely not even early day three. We're talking fifth or sixth round for Dylan Johnson. As far as his dynasty rookie ADP, you mentioned not wanting to draft him in the third round. You don't have to. He's a fourth rounder in both single quarterback and super flex. In fact, of our 10 single quarterback rookie mock drafts, he was only drafted in round three one time. So locked in as a third rounder and 42 overall. And honestly, I'm taking a shot at him, you know, in rookie drafts that have four or five rounds. I'm trying to find running backs that, as Matt said, can just make a roster, maybe have some value. Yep. And hopefully flip for, you know, either flip for a small profit or be able to start them one time or twice or something like that. So, I mean, other players
in the fourth round,
drafted around it. Right. I mean, we're talking Frank Gore, Jamari Thrash, the tight ends, three and four, Theo Johnson, Ben Sennett. So, yeah, I mean, it's starting to get thin down there.
Yeah, for sure. And let's talk about some of those guys right after this word from this week's sponsor. This week's episode of the podcast is brought to you by the guys over at DraftKings and that newest product that I've been talking about the last few weeks. It's called Pick 6. It's a pick-em style platform where you choose players to have more or less of a certain stat, things like passing yards, rushing yards, etc. But the twist that DK has made is that it's a peer-to-peer platform. So if you're contrarian and you outsmart your opponents, the winnings can be massive. It's also available in 21 states, including some that don't even have sports betting. I live in one of those states that don't allow sports betting, but Pick 6 is available, and I can tell you I already love it, and I think you will too. So sign up using our link in the show notes, and you're going to get a brand new offer as the weather gets warmer and those Pick 6 offers start heating up with it. New customers can get an instant 100% deposit match up to $100 in Pick 6 credits. So check it out, check out those show notes, and sign up today.
Dynasty rankings.
We thought we're at the point in the season where we should just talk about these rookies in whole and try to come up with consensus tiers for our Dynasty Superflex rookie rankings. Let's start right at the top, guys. We all have two guys in our first tier. Caleb Williams is one of for each of us. Matt, you have Jaden Daniels as the other name, while Ryan and I both have Marvin Harrison Jr. Is it a coin flip for you between those two?
Between the two quarterbacks?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. This isn't hard, guys. He's an explosive rushing quarterback. He makes plays with both his arms and legs. I don't know how you watch the 2023 season from Jaden Daniels and not come away super impressed with his ability to put an offense on his back and to be the entire offense, basically. And that's the kind of quarterback I'm looking for at the top of my rookie draft. So Williams is awesome from a passing standpoint. He can move around a lot with his legs, but he doesn't have near the kind of rushing explosion, I think, that Daniels does. So you take the safer guy with Williams, you take the higher upside guy with Daniels, in my opinion. Organize those guys any way you want.
Yeah, he certainly has. Jaden Daniels, I'm talking about, has the ability to be an elite fantasy quarterback, and that
from day one,
and that's worthy of being a tier one guy. He's the guy I had the most trouble with when ranking, because I think there's a case to be made that you should take him over Caleb Williams in a draft. So why isn't he in the first tier of my rookie rankings? It's simply because we don't know from the league yet that it's going to happen. Yeah. It feels like we know it about Caleb Williams. We have to see it with Jaden Daniels, and we'll see if he goes number two, maybe he pops up there for me. Ryan, you had Marvin Harrison Jr. in here. Is it for the same reason I do? He could be the number one wide receiver in Dynasty real fast. And that's what, if you have that kind of upside, you belong in the first tier to me.
Yeah, I still think, the default in these rookie drafts is always quarterback, whoever the top quarterback of the year is as far as rookies. But I still think it's a conversation between Harrison and Caleb Williams if you've got that 101.
Yeah, and I just talked to a friend of mine who holds the 101 in one of my local leagues, and he said he's going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. because of that upside and just the small questions surrounding Caleb Williams. So let's move on to tier two. We're going to start that tier with Jaden Daniels. Two of us had him there. After that, Ryan, who are the names that fit into that second tier of rookies for you in Superflex?
Certainly have the next two receivers, Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze, here in this same range. And, honestly, it was tough to separate those even from Harrison. So I think it's fair to potentially consider a larger top tier, especially as we get closer to the NFL draft. But for now, this is how I have it.
Yeah, it seems we have the same guys there. You also threw Drake May in there because that quarterback position, that likely high draft capital, I assume.
Yeah, absolutely. Looks like he's going to be a top three pick. I don't guess I have the same concerns Matt does, and maybe both of you have with May. I mean, I think he can be a day one starter in the NFL. And, you know, honestly, in some ways, I'm more confident in him than Daniels.
Okay. That's a conversation we should have at some point. We don't really have time to get to that, but I'm going to find some time for that here in the next couple of weeks because that'd be a conversation worth having for sure. So Daniels and Neighbors, Adunze certainly land in round two. Matt, you spread yours out just a little bit. Harrison wasn't in round one, so you listed Harrison and Neighbors and spread these tiers out just a little bit more. I like what Ryan said, that maybe this tier should be six or seven in tier one rather than two in tier one, two in round two, and then the rest in tier three. What separates these guys for you?
I just think you can, I can't decide who I like better between Marvin Harrison and Neighbors. Harrison has the 2 years of production, so he feels a little bit safer. Neighbors had the more explosive season. I think he does some things better than Harrison does, but it's hard to go wrong with either of those guys. So again, just like the quarterbacks for me, take them in either order you want. And I do think there's a little bit of separation, maybe not a full tier. I'm fine including Odunze up with those guys as well. But I do think there's a slight separation between those first two and Odunze for me. And then May and Bowers to me belong here in this tier. Again, if you want May ahead of Bowers, that's totally fine. If you want him ahead of Odunze, that's totally fine. For me, I prefer the two skill position players above him.
Yeah, you're talking about tier three here with Drake May and Brock Bowers. You have those guys along with Rome Odunze. For me, Matt, it's not Harrison versus Neighbors. It's actually Neighbors versus Odunze, who could be that wide receiver too for me. That's still kind of up in the air, and I could see a team falling in love with Odunze and seeing him as their number one receiver out of the gate. Although he may do better playing in that T. Higgins role behind or with alongside another stud until he takes over the reins. So tier one ends up our consensus rankings: Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr., followed by Jaden Daniels, Malik Neighbors, and Rome Odunze in tier two. Tier three ends up being Drake May, Brock Bowers, and Brian Thomas, Ryan, who both you and I listed as tier three players. Matt pushed him down a tier. I really like Thomas as a guy, again, who could immediately fill a number one receiver role in the NFL if he gets the right landing spot. And I think his game profiles well, translates well to the next level. I'm really excited about his upside and really love the idea of getting him potentially at seven or eight in your rookie draft.
Yeah, that big play specialist, obviously huge season, led the country in receiving touchdowns and boosted his stock. I mean, I mentioned this with Bowers that I kind of feel like he's in a tier of his own. I do think if anybody's with him, it's Brian Thomas. Like he's the other receiver that is close enough to be included there with Bowers.
So after tier three, we move on to tier four, and it feels like tier four will be either wide receivers or quarterbacks, because there isn't a tight end worth considering, and we're not quite to the running back tier just yet, Matt.
Yeah, I've got Brian Thomas and Worthy here. Like, to me, there are seven, I don't know if you want to call them safe, but relatively safe picks in a super flex draft. And Brian Thomas and Worthy come in just after them. They just have a couple of warts, I think with Thomas, it's the really only 1 year of elite production, a couple of issues with his route running. With Worthy, with Worthy, it drives me crazy. I see people saying that him running so fast is bad for his profile. Like, I do not understand that at all. To call him somebody like John Ross when Worthy has this production profile, he did it from as a freshman. Like, I just think that is really bad analysis to say that Worthy is a worse prospect because he ran fast. And I've seen that out there. But these two, like I said, just a little bit less safe, I guess, than those top seven.
And Xavier Worthy is one of those guys. We've talked about it on the show that the NFL is getting used to these slight framed wide receivers, and dynasty managers need to do the same thing. Worthy is so electrifying, that 4.2 40 that he ran, and at just 165 pounds, that would be enough to push him down the board in the past for me. I've held on strong. Mm-hmm. I got him right here in tier four, right behind Brian Thomas. I have him along with Troy. I put Troy Franklin for the same reasons in this tier, and then added Adonai Mitchell as well. Ryan, when you look at your tier, which includes Worthy and Franklin, you also threw J.J. McCarthy in there, who we talked about last week in the rookie report.
Yeah, I agreed with a lot of what you guys said as far as your concerns about McCarthy. This is, you know, honestly, this is just a draft capital play. I think he is going to get, it seems like, that top 10 draft capital and potentially an early opportunity at a starting job. And again, defaulting to the quarterback position in Superflex, this is where I'm valuing him now, even with some of those concerns you guys mentioned last week.
Yeah, and we got into it big time last week, so we don't need to rehash it. I actually did my rankings this week, though, and I pushed him all the way down to 19. And I know that's a lot lower than a lot of others that get into these rankings and things like that. I just won't have any J.J. McCarthy. I don't think that because he plays a premium position, we should bump him up any higher. Honestly, I think he shouldn't even be a first-round NFL draft pick. He's more of a Derek Carr than he is. He doesn't have the upside to be one of these guys we start every single week in single quarterback or maybe even in super flex, to be honest with you guys. So Xavier Worthy and Troy Franklin are the only ones that qualify for tier four. Let's move on to tier five, because it's probably time to start considering that next tier of quarterbacks and also maybe some running backs, guys.
Not yet for me. I put Troy Franklin there just a hair. I'm totally fine with having Troy Franklin up there with Thomas and Worthy. I just think there's a little bit of separation there. And then I have both the quarterbacks, Nixon McCarthy, and then A.D. Mitchell, who you had a tier above, Dan. A.D. Mitchell is to me, like, I have the hardest time evaluating him. We haven't talked about him yet on the Rookie Report segment yet, but he's so athletic and when he turns it on, he really turns it on, but he just disappears sometimes. So I have a tough time with Mitchell right now, but just based on the ceiling of Mitchell, I have him here with those two quarterbacks. And I agree with you. I'm not a huge on McCarthy. I actually prefer Nix to McCarthy. I don't know if that is different than most people, but based on draft capital, where these guys are going to get drafted, it being a premium position in this format, I think he belongs here.
Yeah, I actually do think this is the right time to throw in some of these running backs. And Ryan, I don't know if you're like me, but I still have these guys lumped together, talking about Trey Benson, Jalen Wright, Jonathan Brooks, and even Braylon Allen, who just had his pro day last week. So these guys are going to separate on draft night, most likely day two of draft night. I know a lot of people are a little bit leery of Jonathan Brooks because of the injury, but I still believe that he would be the headline guy in this class had he not gotten hurt. And what Trey Benson did at the combine really opened a lot of eyes, mine included. So, between Wright, Benson, Brooks, and Allen, I think they're going to all be fringe first-round picks, even in Superflex. And the fact that we can potentially get them around the 15 spot, that feels like a value to me. I like the end of this tier.
Yeah, totally agree. I still have those four pretty tightly packed as well. And it feels like every time I update my rankings, the four shift around slightly between them. But really excited about, or starting to get excited, I should say, about the running back position. It's been looked at as a weakness of this class really throughout the process. But just the fact that we have four, and you know, a lot of people would throw Blake Corum into that conversation as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just the fact that we have four or five guys to be interested in, and we've got a lot of nice landing spots post free agency where if the two match up, we're going to see some big time value boost for these running backs.
And I do have Blake Corum in there. I was just going to mention that in this tier still. I like Corum. I actually have Keon Coleman in this tier as well. And pretty high in the tier, Ladd McConkey, to throw in a couple wide receivers along with Malachi Corley. I really do think the second round of this draft, especially of rookie drafts, especially the first half of the second round, is where there's a lot of value, and I want to get as many picks in that range as I can. I don't think there's a big difference between the last pick in the first round and, say, like the eighth pick in the second round. That may change, of course, based on where these guys go in the draft. Any other names we should throw into this tier? I guess the only one I didn't mention is Bo Nix. Matt, I know you had Bo Nix in tier four as well. Or five. Yeah, we're in five.
Yeah, I mentioned how I feel about Knicks already for the running backs. I have them a tier below these four guys, below Franklin, Knicks, McCarthy, and Mitchell. And I have six kind of locked in. Like I feel like I change the order of them, you know, daily sometimes if I'm really thinking about these guys. But for me, I prefer those wide receivers and those two quarterbacks just above every single running back. But I would like to have five or six picks in the second round and just take all of these running backs. Like that is going to be the sweet spot for these guys. And I'm really trying to focus on acquiring second round picks right now.
Yeah. So I guess this tier in consensus ends up with Mitchell, McConkey as the two wide receivers in it. Then a handful of running backs, including Trey Benson, Jalen Wright, Jonathan Brooks, and Braylon Allen. And then Bo Nix slides into tier five as well. After this, we're into the late part of the second round, mid to late part of the second round in our consensus rankings. Who are the names that really jump off to you, Matt, as the next tier of players? If you're not going to, we've already talked about the running backs. Is there anybody else worth throwing into this tier, or is it just all the backs?
Well, you didn't mention Lloyd and Davis, who are two of my running backs, two and three right now. I can't get off Davis. I know he's not going to get the draft capital. I'm going to have to adjust that down once we get that information. But the wide receiver that I have with these guys is Jalen McMillan. Like I keep coming back to him too. I like him better than Jalen Polk, who we haven't talked about yet. I think he's the second best wide receiver from the Huskies last season. It's the route running. It's all that kind of stuff. I think an NFL team is going to get a steal with McMillan with what he's going to bring to the table, assuming he is healthy.
Yeah, I like McMillan as well. He certainly deserves to be mentioned among these names. I had Polk in here as well. Jatavion Sanders is one guy that I believe belongs